Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Seth Tupper is an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Roger Whittle is managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion. Today, they form our weekly Dakota Political Junkies panel. We'll fill in the blanks on industrial hemp, the Indian Health Services debate, and who might be gearing up for a run for governor. Seth Tupper, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me.
And Roger Whittle, welcome as well.
I'm glad to be here.
Seth, why don't we start with you and this article that you did in the Journal about who's looking strong in 2018 and the money race so far. Do you want to give us a quick rundown?
Sure, yeah. Monday was the deadline for statewide candidates to file their campaign finance reports, year-end reports for 2015. And the reason that was significant is because both Marty Jackley, who's the current Attorney General, and Mark Mickelson, who is the current state representative, of course, son of former Governor George Mickelson, both have political action committees that were started on their behalf. And so reports were filed, and the big, I guess, maybe surprise and the big news was that Mark Mickelson's PAC raised north of $500,000 in just the last 4 months or so of 2015. Meanwhile, Marty Jackley has about $400,000 in his Jackley for Attorney General committee, which still exists, and also has another $60,000 or so in the PAC that's in his name. So those two both have around $500,000, give or take, already for potential governor's race that they're both rumored to be interested in, and that's certainly a strong position more than 2 years away from the election. So that was the big news, and then, of course, other rumored candidates include U.S. Representative Kristi Noem, and, of course, she is raising money for her congressional reelection right now. So Jackley and also Mickelson are really the two leaders in the race so far.
Who else is on that rumor list then, besides Kristi?
Well, of course, people wonder if Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels might be interested. From his fundraising activity, it doesn't appear that way. But again, there's still a lot of time before somebody would need to make that decision. We had a couple of people from the Journal were at the annual newspaper day at the state capitol last week, and they came back saying that there was a rumor circulating that even former Governor Mike Rounds, who's now U.S. Senator, might be interested in leaving his Senate seat early and running for his old job in the same way that, if people recall, Governor Janklow served separated terms himself. I don't know if that's true or not, and again, there's a long time before the election, but that was apparently something that was being said at the Capitol as a potential rumor. So, those are on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, I think people have long wondered if Sioux Falls Mayor Mike Huther would run. He hasn't started any sort of campaign fundraising committee that we can see yet with at the state level. And then Billy Sutton, a legislator from the Burke area, has been mentioned as a possible candidate on the Democratic side, too. And that's kind of the run of the rumor mill, as I've heard it, anyway.
Roger, do you want to chime in on that? What have you been hearing?
Well, Seth's story was the first time I'd read in print about the Rounds rumor running for governor again, but I have heard from several people that he is very unhappy with the way the Senate runs and how difficult it is to get things done in Washington, D.C. So it actually doesn't surprise me that he's thinking about leaving the Senate and coming back to his old job.
Hmm. And John Thune has more than $11 million already. Do you want to start with that angle, Roger?
John Thune has $11 million. He didn't have to spend any last time because he ran unopposed. He, of course, can shell out some of that money to other Republicans running for office. The Democrats have come out and said that they still plan on running somebody against Thune this year, but they haven't released any names yet. Whoever it is going to, of course, have a huge uphill battle with Thune sitting there with that much money in his campaign chest and the Democrats basically starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the time of year we start talking about Thune for vice president. It seems to happen time and time again. So let's talk about Thune for vice president. Is that completely a moonshot, Seth?
No, I don't think it's a moonshot. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, every presidential cycle lately, we've seen his name come up in national media reports, and that's been happening again. You know, we go through the same thing every time, but the knock on him the criticism that people make is, well, he's from a small state. There's not a lot of fundraising that can be done from South Dakota to help a national ticket. We, of course, don't have many electoral votes. So that's the knock on him. But I've always thought that he would be, you know, a pretty good running mate in that, you know, we've seen lately in the form of people like Sarah Palin that really you probably want to look for a running mate that's not going to embarrass you and you know, hurt the ticket. And I think Senator Thune is somebody who could very capably campaign. He has respect from the more conservative wing of the party, but also is able to speak effectively to people in the more moderate parts of the party, and you know, has a solid background and a lot of respect from Republicans. And I think he'd be the kind of a running mate who could not hurt the ticket. And I think that's something that presidential candidates ought to look for, is who can I get that won't be a negative, rather than trying to find somebody who will be some kind of jolt like McCain was looking for with Sarah Palin, and then have it backfire. So, but you know, we'll see what happens as it goes forward. But yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all.
So our whole goal as a state is to not be an embarrassment.
Well,
that's what we bring to the table.
Goal. Like I said, if you're a presidential candidate, think of George McGovern when he picked his running mate. You know, it came out later that his running mate had electroshock therapy. McCain with Sarah Palin seemed like a great choice at first, and then she became sort of a national joke. So, you know, it seems like the best thing you can do is find somebody who, again, won't be a draw, won't pull the ticket down, and will just kind of stay solidly in the background and try to add to the ticket rather than detracting from it.
Sure. Roger, anything you want to add to that, or should we move on to our next?
I could add to that. I think it makes even more sense this year, since all the leading Republican candidates are these non-establishment types, so the Tea Party leaders, Cruz and Rubio and Trump. And if one of those, it looks like one of those will win the nomination, to pick a, you know, a rank-and-file establishment guy as his running mate would do wonders to bring the party together behind whoever wins the nomination. So I think this year it's a better chance than it has been the last couple of years, so last couple of elections.
Let's move on to education. The governor's teacher pay plan is introduced. We've got numbers to go along with our bills. What are we following, Seth? What are we watching now?
Well, I think what we watch now is just, you know, where will the legislative leadership line up on this issue? So far, they've been pretty hesitant to throw their support behind it. You know, Brian Gosch, a leader in the House from out here in Rapid City, has said he's trying to find alternatives to a tax increase. So I think it's up to the governor now. I you know, it'll be interesting to see if he has any kind of active lobbying effort on this. Sometimes that's difficult to gauge, because a lot of times it's behind the scenes. But, you know, the bill is out. You know, the numbers are there. And now it's just a matter of can support be rallied behind it. And that'll be, you know, since it's the governor's plan, I think it'll be largely up to him to make his case and to try to win the leadership over and gain the votes that are necessary to get this through.
Now, Roger, I'm seeing different bills with different elements of the plan. They're broken out. Is it a one big package, or can one of those bills pass and another fail? How does that work?
Well, the administration is saying that all the bills should pass together as a package, because one separate bill has the tax increase in it. And they're saying that without that tax increase, the other three bills that deal with distributing the money would be, you know, kind of irrelevant. The extra money coming into the system through the tax increase is the main thing. Personally, I think he's going to have a hard time getting this passed. During his State of the State address, I was thinking, good idea, this should fly. But we had a Cracker Barrel session up here with some Northeast South Dakota legislators, and they were dead set against any kind of tax increase to pay for teachers for various reasons. This is even before a bill came out. So That kind of changed my mind a little, and I think it's going to be a difficult, difficult job for the governor to get two-thirds majority of the legislature to agree to this.
And do those folks have alternative plans of their own, or were they just pretty much digging their feet
down and saying no? At the time, they did not. They were mostly upset that they were 2 weeks into the session and they hadn't seen any bill yet that they could even, you know, talk about. So they were very critical of the governor for not having something ready to go when the session started, referring to the biggest tax increase in the history of the state, and they have nothing in front of them to look at yet. So
was that strategic of the governor?
I'm not sure it was strategic. I just think it's a complicated issue, and it took a lot of time to get the bills together. So,
right. Seth, let's talk about industrial hemp. Let's move on to that. Where is that at right now?
Oh, that I couldn't tell you. I know that, of course, there's an effort in the legislature to legalize industrial hemp, and I haven't followed it very closely, but my thoughts on it have always been it's interesting because, you know, it's pretty hard to believe that we're ever going to approve medical marijuana or marijuana in general in a state where hemp isn't even legal. For people who aren't familiar with it, you know, hemp is basically the sort of the non-intoxicating cousin of marijuana. It can be used in all kinds of products. But, you know, historically, law enforcement in South Dakota has been very against legalizing the growing of hemp because they say it looks so much like marijuana, it would make it easy for somebody to sort of use an industrial hemp operation as a front for, you know, selling illegal marijuana. But here we were, you know, we had, of course, people circulating ballot initiatives on medical marijuana, and that's kind of putting the cart before the horse in a way. I mean, it would be funny in a way if we would approve medical marijuana before we would legalize hemp. So it would seem that one needs to come before the other, and that's why it'll be interesting to see what happens with industrial hemp this year, because as society moves toward more liberalization of laws surrounding marijuana, you would think a first step would have to be legalizing hemp.
Roger, is this something farmers are calling for? What's the interest from the ag sector?
Well, the bill is patterned after a similar bill in North Dakota, where the State Department of Agriculture can specify pilot programs to kind of test this whole theory if hemp can be a viable cash crop for people. And personally, I think it's a good idea. But as Seth said, there's a lot of pushback from law enforcement and from people who I don't think really understand that there's a huge difference. And I think the people who want it, who want hemp to be grown as a cash crop, need to do a lot of education to people before it's going to happen.
And now Governor Dennis Daugaard called it a distraction. So should we be talking about it at all?
Well, I think we should. I mean, why not? You know, give farmers one more option of a viable cash crop to make more money. I remember back, you know, was it 30 years ago when SDSU first started testing growing grapes up here? Everyone was looking at grapes, really. And now, what do we have, 30 wineries in the state?
Right, right.
So I just think it would be a good thing.
Right. And what is the main difference between those two products? It's the psychoactive ingredient. It's a different plant. We don't really understand the science. That's why we said there had to be some education about the difference between what's being grown, right?
Right. So all I know is that the industrial hemp does not have the same THC content that the recreational marijuana does.
I feel we better get to Indian Health Services and that debate now. Representative Christy Noem, Paula Hawks, people are coming out and sort of having their voices heard on this and searching for some accountability and some change. What's fueling this discussion right now? Seth, you want to start?
Well, of course, there's been, you know, there's always been problems with the Indian Health Service, but there was an incident at the Rosebud Hospital, for example, recently we reported on, where it was in danger of losing its, I believe if I remember right, its Medicaid reimbursement because of problems that have been detected at the hospital, and so you know, problems in basically the quality of care that's being given there. So you know, there's obviously some legitimate concern here that the federal government has an obligation to provide health care for tribes, and that's fueling part of it. Of course, we're talking politics. Some of it is political. You know, Paula Hawks had an event the other day where she talked about the issue and about the Indian Health Service. And as a Democrat, she needs to get in front of that. The tribes and the reservations in South Dakota have always been a reliable Democratic vote. And if she's going to have any chance at all, she needs to protect that segment of her base. And so I think, you know, that's part of the motivation for her trying to jump in on the issue and gain some traction on that.
So I think Christy Noem said it was in a state of emergency. Tribal health care is in a state of emergency due to deep-rooted problems. Roger, is this a new state of emergency? Has it been going on for a long time?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything new. It's been a problem for quite a while. And this, I think the federal government is actually taking notice of this, too, with the whole plan about South Dakota expanding Medicaid is based on the federal government picking up paying more for Indian health services to get treatment at other than Indian health service clinics. You know, if a Native American has a problem that can't be treated at the IHS, that they would go to a regular hospital, and then the federal government would pay those bills now. And that's all part of the plan that's going on now at a federal level.
And if she says state of emergency and that has truth to it, is there an emergency stopgap fix? Is anybody saying, like, this is going to take a while, but sorry, you're in a state of emergency?
Yeah, I think it's been in a state of emergency for so long that that it kind of loses its appeal at that point.
Anything else you want to touch on today, Roger?
Not unless Seth does.
Seth, we're good?
Yeah, I think so. I'm continuing to watch the presidential race like everyone and be continually amazed.
as long as we don't talk about snow, that would be fine.
Seth Tupper is an enterprise reporter for the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Roger Whittle is managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thank you for your time as
My pleasure.